But anyway, mate, look, it's really good that you come onto the podcast. I'm really happy. Like I said, I'm really happy anybody who says, yeah, I'll come on the podcast and have a chat with you or whatever, and take out the time of their day to come and chat with myself and the audience at the Crown of Command. But, mate, you've been quite prolific in making terrain.
I have, yeah, I sort of started doing like kind of 3D models, for my own 3D printing. I started 3D printing like nearly a decade ago.
Really?
I bought a really cheap 3D printer,
Right.
because I've got a history of through my work through 3D modeling things, but normally just digitally. There's no physical stuff, and I just started tinkering with it, messing around with it, and then when I got back into the hobby, I discovered obviously that there was loads of things out there you could print. And being me, I was never quite satisfied with what anyone else had designed, so I started designing my own, and putting stuff out there. But yeah, so I think the stuff that you were quite interested in the Bastion, which is like
Yeah,
a
that's
take
good,
off
mate.
of the old 90s kind of studio model that they had. So a few changes to it. I've given it a bit of battle damage and a little bit of reinforcement, and I redesigned the ramp at the back, because I spent ages digging through like old White Dwarfs and old rule books and army books, well, codexes and stuff like that, trying to find a picture of the back of it. It was really difficult, and then when I did, I discovered that the ramp at the back was like a ski slope, and I was like, I'm not putting any miniatures on that because they'll just just roll straight down, you know. So yeah, and I did a kind of 3D version of the old cardboard ruins. Don't know if you've
Yes,
seen
I saw
those as
those. They're
well.
great, man. They're
Yeah,
awesome.
it was that again. That was just because I went online to look at the cost of getting a full set of the actual cardboard ruins, and I was like, "Now I'm good, thanks. I'll go make my own. I'll go design my own." And I like to do it so that it's all for like FDM printing. That's what I do with like a. I just have an Ender 3 now. I replaced my very cheap
Right.
old one with an Ender 3 because it was just starting to wear out. So it's nothing. You don't my, like, and all my models are printed on that, and I designed them so you don't need to use supports. So there's no major overhangs, or you print it in parts so that you can put it together with
Yeah.
any overhangs are taken by the way you print it, because printing with FDM, you get kind of rough edges where the supports have been. It's not perfect
Right.
kind of underneath things. So if you've got like a square door frame, you might be able to bridge across, but if you've got a support underneath, or you've got something that's overhanging like that, you need to have something underneath, and you pull that off afterwards and it just leaves a bit of a rough surface underneath. So I hate that, and so everything I do is designed to be printed without these, because that just comes out cleaner. But yeah.
You keep looking over there, mate. So I'm assuming all the terrain sitting on the table over there.
There is, yeah, the Bastion is sat right over there. So you can look across
It's a
my
gorgeous
messy
piece of
room.
terrain,
It's
honestly.
as far off in the distance over there, but
Okay. Look,
yeah,
it's
no,
an
I was
amazing piece of piece.
yeah, no, it was really fun to do as well, actually. It's just something that I enjoy doing, and I started doing it for myself, but I kind of like the extra bit of challenge of trying to make it so it's nice and easy to print for other people, and what have you, because I like making things difficult for myself.
I'd imagine. I know my good friend Carnifex is a fan of yours, and he printed those, the cardstock buildings that you made in 3D, and they paint up really nice too. They look really good. So,
No, he did a nice job of printing them and painting them. So it's really nice. I don't see a lot of it. It's always really nice to see when someone's been like making my models. It's very satisfying. So it's always nice to see people sharing them. So
Yeah, mate, that's it's a lovely, lovely thing if you can create something and I don't know what programs you're using to do it, but yeah, to create something. And yeah, I'm really surprised you'd be doing it for 10 years, like almost a decade. Has printers been around for that long?
3D printing is a really old technology, actually. It's like it
Really?
goes back to the 70s, but it's always been like that. It was about 10, 15 years ago it started being a thing where people started making kits that you could build at home.
Right.
I think who was it? There was a company, I can't remember now. There's a company who started making just like a here you can make a thing that you can print at home. And it's like one of the reasons that the filament is 0.75 millimeter diameter is because it was originally they were built to print with strimmer. You get the kind of strimmer for doing the edges of your grass, and it's got this kind of wire that you pull out of the bottom of it
Right. Okay. Like a
to make the kind of blade that does the trimming.
yeah.
That was what these kind of early home printers were printing
Really?
with, because there wasn't anything else, so they were just
Wow.
melting like this stuff. So
We call
and so
them whippersnippers in Australia. Whippersnipper.
All right, I've never heard that. You guys have got like great names for everything.
Yeah, the old whippersnipper. Bloody hell, whippersnipper cord. Holy shit. I never thought. There you go. That's a
Yeah, so
new
that's why
revelation.
that's why it's that diameter. That's the kind of standard thing, is because it's the same for that. So.
Yeah.
But
Well, there
yeah, no, it's great. I think I've said other places that I just love being able to pick things out of my imagination and have them exist all of a sudden in front of me. It was always one of the things I liked about doing like 3D artwork, was that you kind of take things and you make them kind of real. And but yeah, now doing it actually kind of with a 3D printer, it just gave a whole new kind of dynamic to it. And I'm sometimes far too ambitious. I've got about 20 half finished projects on
right.
my computer, but that I'm still trying to figure out kind of logistically how you make them. But yeah, I like doing done a few vehicles as well as scenery. I did like a kind of a redesign of the old oak battle wagon, and something that I'd always wanted, actually, despite the fact I don't collect Imperial Guard, is the do you remember the very first epic Leman Russ?
Yeah.
It was a really, really early one that didn't look quite like the kind of one that we all know now. It had like ball sponsons and things like that. Like the sponsons were like spheres with the guns sticking straight out the side. And it just had a slightly different shape and profile. So I was like, I'll do a version of that as well. So in 28 mil. So because I always find that the kind of the Lehman Russ that came out in the 90s doesn't look quite right with the old Rogue Trader Imperial Guard. There's something not quite right about the style of it. It's much more of the kind of 90s style rather than that kind of late 80s Rogue Trader era. So I was like, I wanted to make a Lehman Russ that looked like it fitted in
All right.
with like the original Rhino and Predator and the original Land Raider.
Love all those
So
kits. Love all the Mark
ah
ones. They're brilliant. Yeah.
yeah.
Well, I might actually have your Land Raider then. If that's the one that I have here that you designed, I think I might have your design then, mate, I think.
No, not I didn't do it. It was a Lehman Russ I did, not a Land Raider.
Oh, sorry, the
Although
Battle Wagon, Orc Battle Wagon. Did you do that one as well?
I did one, yeah, there's quite a few out there.
Oh, is it? Okay, I
It
don't know
might
if
not
two
be
is
that
it.
one, but that was I think one, and I did the old card stock bunker as well. I think that was the first thing I actually did and released. Do you remember the what was it?
Right. Is that the one I've got?
Yeah.
I think Carnifex sent me a whole heap of stuff and I painted recently. If they're the same ones that you did.
I don't know if it is. Again, it's one that there's a few of them out there. But mine, I did see you used the ones in the, were they in your Gene Steeler or
Yeah, that's the ones.
Battle Report? Yeah, no, they're a different guys.
Oh,
I
sorry.
think they
I don't know.
I saw those, and you would have had to use supports to print them on an FDM printer. I think Carnifex has done them in resin for you.
I've done no idea. I have no idea. I just get them sent in a box. I have no idea where they come from, how they're printed, who prints them. I have no idea. I'm in the
So
dark.
are you planning on getting into 3D printing yourself then? Is that
Well, that's an interesting thing because obviously it's the big bugbear in the room and it's out there. It's being used by people. Even today, I was watching something on Instagram with John Stallard, of all people, from Warlord Games, with his 3D printed camels that he's using in some of his one of his Arabic Renaissance army or whatever the hell it is. But even he's using printed models, you know. So it's just they're everywhere. And on Kickstarter, I was on the Kickstarter for the Footsore Vikings range, and I haven't been to Kickstarter for a very long time, many years, because I've just been not interested in Kickstarter at all. But then I saw other it gives you some kind of related Kickstarters based on the thing your search, and a lot of all the other Kickstarters that related to that in miniatures are all through 3D printing. You know, World War II, it's fantasy, it's science fiction, it's everything you can think of. Anything that's modeled, that's created, it's done through 3D printing. So obviously it's come leaps and bounds since I first heard about it, which it would have been, I don't know how long, 5 years ago, 6 years ago. It seemed to be more prolific then. People were getting them in their homes and, you know, people were printing things and that kind of thing. So obviously it's becoming more and more prevalent now in the wargame industry, and whether they're using it to print out test models, and then that model is then cast and then made into metal, I don't know. But yeah, for terrain, it seems for me like a really good way of doing things,
Oh,
because there's
definitely, yeah.
great designs out there for terrain. Not, you know, just your stuff and other people's stuff. The Baron's War thing I really like, but it's all STLs. And there's things that I think that a 3D printer can do that I just cannot do by hand. Even though I really respect the old style of making terrain by hand using materials, but I think the 3D printer delivers something that you just cannot do.
I think both of them have their place, to be honest, on the
Yeah.
tabletop. I think I shared some like kind of rock stacks that I made with the wee one recently. You know, these kind of big kind of towering rock formations that you used to get in White Dwarf in the 90s. And I made some of them just out of pizza boxes and tissue and a bit of sand recently. And they look great, and you could 3D print something like that, but it's still nice just to sit down with some glue and a pair of scissors and turn a pile of recycling into some nice terrain. And it was great sitting down. Like I say, I did it with the wee one, and she's quite happily kind of splodging glue on and making a bit of a mess. So,
That's nice.
so I think both ways of doing terrain, certainly, but 3D printing, yeah, it gives you for doing buildings and things like that, where you're going to spend ages trying to kind of get all your bits of plasticard or card cut neatly and then stuck together and things like that. It can just take a lot of that kind of hassle out of things. So that's I need to get some more terrain on the go. It seems to be kind of the more popular stuff on my cults page. Not that I've made a lot, not that a lot of people are downloading it, but I think I don't think I'm going to be making a career out of it anytime soon, put it that way.
I'm happy you've got a job in the industry where you're making 3D models and that kind of thing. I did try it at uni for one semester, and boy, oh boy, by the end of it, I was about to throw my computer out the window, mate. I was so pissed off with it. I forget what the program was that I made it with, but I did something related to my hobby. I made a anvil, and I made the Runesmith's helmet, hammer, and shield based on the fourth edition model. And that was all okay with the instructor and everything like that. That was fine. So I did it all. I'm trying to think of the program now, but I can't remember. But it was just a pain in the ass, and I just thought I never want to do this ever again. So I respect people who can make models in those kind of programs who have the mind for it. There's a certain level of patience, and I hear that Brawniak, when I talk to him over in Norway, he's talking about that process of making the supports on models and that kind of thing is just as relaxing as painting. For me, it's not. It's just not for me. I mean, I've tried it, I've given it a go, but it's just not my cup of tea. But I respect yourself who can make these things. Yeah.
And there was a thing when I was in school that, you know, I don't know if you get like graphical communication or whatever Australians call it. It's where you're doing like techie drawing,
technical drawing,
stuff like
technical drawing. Okay.
It was like the first class of that, and I'd missed the first week. I think I'd been ill. And they sat down and they give you this big wad of A3 sheets of paper, and you've got like the front, the back, and the side of a shape, and you've got to draw it in an isometric on the page. And my mate Simon was next to me, and he was like, "Oh, you're going to struggle to catch up. This is really difficult." And the teacher comes over and says, "Right, okay," shows me how to do the first one. He says, "Right, let me know how you're getting on." And about half an hour later, I put my hand up, and the teacher comes over and goes, "Oh, Callum, what can I help you with? You know, as what are you struggling with?" And I went, "I've finished these." And he looked at me and he went, "That's a term's work." And I was it was something that just immediately clicked in my head, is just 3D shapes and things like that. And so that's, you know, that's why I've ended up doing it as work, and why I quite happily do this. I never thought I would, like, if you'd told teenage me back in the 90s that I was going to be making miniatures of my own design at some point, I wouldn't have believed you. It's something I'm very proud of, and as I say, I don't necessarily think it's good. It's something that I'll be making a career out of, but it's really nice to see other people enjoying them, though, and that's why I like to share them, is just to see other people doing it. So, and to cover the costs of all my filament.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you've been very generous in sharing a lot of your files. Now, this is through 3D Cult, is that right?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
If you look up Dr. Spoke, or if you look up Oldhammer, they're all tagged as Oldhammer because they're all kind of like 90s, late 80s, 90s kind of designs. I'm just finishing up a couple of Chaos Tanks at the moment. I don't know if you remember, there were these old Epicast kind of resin ones that were made in the 90s that were like a rhino and a predator, but they've got like skulls all over them. It's like a lot of the, you know, like big skulls, big stupid kind of weird skulls on them. And I really liked that. And I thought, you know, I'm putting together some Emperor's Children very slowly. And I thought, you know what, I need a rhino, because I thought I'll do one of those, and I really enjoyed it. And I thought, right, I'll do a predator as well. So it's kind of a mix of the Epicast resin kit and a bit of the original predator and original rhino, and then just my own stuff thrown in on top, because I like to add something to myself to these things. So.
Oh, cool. I look forward to seeing those designs. That sounds very interesting. Now, Epicast, is that not Armorcast? Is that something different?
There was a similar kind of company. Right. I don't know if they were licensed like Armorcast was. All of their stuff was sort of looks close enough to be used in a game, but not like, it's not like the Armorcast Baneblade, which was just basically a scaled up epic Baneblade. And the Armorcast Gargant as well. Christ, I love it. It's enormous. It's like 2 foot tall, that thing. I don't know where I'd keep that. So imagine putting that on the table in Games Workshop in the 90s. It's like, yeah, sorry, this doesn't actually fit into the deployment zone.
I think they use those during, I think I talked to people like that this bit, because I think maybe people have missed it or never saw it, but they actually played at Games Day epic scale games using 28mm models. So they had like the, you know, the 20, because in epic scale obviously it's 6mm, but they made it in 28mm using Marines, you know, 5 to a base. Everything was exactly the same, but just upscaled into 28mm. And I think they used those Armorcast Gargants and Titans during those games day demonstrations, because more of a participation thing. You could get up there on a table and start walking around and moving the guys around. So yeah, it was quite funny to see those photographs now. But
yeah, I remember seeing things like that at games day in the '90s. I think I went a couple of times and pressed my nose up against the glass of all the Golden Demon entries, you know. So I wouldn't have been that old at the time, and I was just like, there's the local Carlisle Games Workshop organized a bus, and you all got to stay overnight upstairs in Games Workshop and then set off at like 3 in the morning to get down Birmingham
really?
Or something in time. Yeah. It's the kind of nonsense you just couldn't do these days, you know. There's no way. We're just gonna leave like kind of 20 to 30 small children with two random guys that work for Games Workshop.
I never knew they did that, like a sleepover at Games Workshop. Wow. Yeah, I would love that. And if I was a kid, man, that would be like just a dream, you know?
No, I think I just ate sweets like mad, and I don't think I slept. I think on one of them, my dad picked me up from Carlisle at like kind of probably like 9 at night after the day. And he was just pulling off onto the motorway outside Carlisle, and I was chatting 10 to the dozen. And halfway through a sentence, I just fell straight asleep because I just hadn't slept the whole time, and I'd just been gobbing sweets and high on sugar nonstop. So, yeah.
I'm glad you still remember that then. That's lovely. That's a good memory.
I have a lot of fond memories about like kind of Games Workshop, and I used to go there every Saturday with my mates and play games and paint miniatures and take part in silly competitions. They had a thing called there was a weekly competition called the Feely Box.
Oh, tell me.
It was a cardboard box with a hole in the top of it, and they would put like something like a miniature in it, and everybody would take it in turns, put their hand in the cardboard box, and they had to say what the miniature was.
Right.
And then at the end, whoever guessed right or got closest could decide if they wanted what was in the Feely box or the mystery prize. And sometimes the mystery prize would be like a box off the shelf. Or sometimes it would be something worse than was in the Feely box. So you never knew. So,
that's wonderful.
I remember like I got like the Terminator for my Wolfguard with an assault cannon came out of the Feely box. Cause I was like, I did it. And I was like, I knew exactly what it was. And I said, it's a Terminator with an assault cannon. The assault cannon's just sitting slightly low. And they jokingly went, oh yeah, and what chapter is it? And I went, and I just looked and felt it a bit. I went, oh, it's Ultramarines, isn't it? Like just joking, like, you know, you can't tell at all. And they turned out it was, and they were just like, hey, does he know that? And they went, do you want what's in the Feely box, or do you want the mystery prize? And I was like, no, I need that for my Wolfguard. I'll take the Terminator. Thank you. And they went, that's the right choice this week, because the mystery prize was the Terminator, which was a skull stuck to a 25mm base. That was what you would have got instead. So that was like a booby prize that week.
Yeah.
So no, I've great fond memories of all that kind of thing, and a kind of the world's so different there with Games Workshop. That just doesn't happen there anymore. So
no. No, certainly doesn't. And we're going to go for a quick ad break, and we'll come back. We're going to talk more about your history, mate, how you got into Games Workshop and what led you down this radical path of collecting miniatures and sleeping over before Games Day. So we're back in just a moment. If you are enjoying this podcast and the content on the Crown of Command Games YouTube channel, then please consider supporting me on Patreon. Becoming a Stormboy allows you access to behind-the-scenes news, information on upcoming podcast guests and themes, video battle reports, and occasionally exclusive podcasts with special guests or fellow patrons. And coming soon are painting videos, which we made to give you the skills and tips on painting in the Red Period using modern paints and practical applications. And you can also access one-to-one painting lessons in the Heavy Lead Masterclass tier for a 40-minute personalized painting lesson. So check out patreon.com/the Crown of Command podcast. How did you actually get into the Games Workshop hobby, mate?
My brother collected it. He's what, about 6 years older than me. So when I would have been kind of, you know, 6, 7, 8, I saw him kind of starting to collect all these things. And I would steal his White Dwarfs and read them and things like that. And then as he got into his late teens, he kind of moved out of the hobby. And I basically inherited all his stuff. So I was left with a load of kind of late 80s, just a big mix of stuff. I remember, like, I had bits of Space Hulk, I had bits of old Warhammer Fantasy, I had kind of old Rogue Trader stuff, bits of, yeah, I had the Space Crusade Dreadnought, but I don't think I had any other bits from Space Crusade and things like that. So, you know, just a big mix of things, and he'd mainly collected Orcs and Goblins for fantasy, because I think he'd got the, was it fourth edition that was the High Elves and Goblins? He'd got that starter set, and so I got all that as well, and that led me on to ending up with, like, in the mid to late 90s, probably 96, 97, I had a 5,000 point Orc and Goblin army.
Wow.
Just, yeah. I didn't know anybody who could actually field an army to take it on. And mostly painted as well. And not necessarily very well, but that was just what and anytime it was a birthday or I got any money, it was down Games Workshop, get something new. And also, because I was in the Games Workshop every weekend and entering all these competitions, I'd win stuff as well. I think in the late 90s, I entered a painting competition with some Space Wolves, and it was the under 16s I entered. And I think I probably was 16 at the time or something like that.
Yeah.
And I entered with a squad, and I won the squad, and then I won the kind of overall for under 16s, and then I won the overall for the whole day.
Wow.
So
trifecta, mate.
I think I'd put in a lot more effort than everyone else. Like, I'd made a scenic base for the whole squad, and I'd painted up a banner, and you know, and I'd made it all specifically for the painting competition. And I think that gave me quite a lot. Like, other people had just turned up with some of their miniatures that they played with there every weekend, and I think the staff were a bit like, well, this guy's put in some more effort. So, but basically, my dad had given me my train fare and enough money for some chips for my lunch, and I came home with like two boxes of a box of units, an army box. So I got a box of units for winning the kind of squad. I got an army box for winning the under 16s, and I got the box set with all the paints in and all the brushes and everything that was, like, back then was like 125 quid or something. And I got off the train with my arms full of boxes, and my dad's like, "Where did you get those from?" That's like
checking for his credit cards. Yeah,
I didn't nick them. I'm not sneaking out of the shop with my arms full of boxes.
I didn't use my chip money, Dad. It's like, don't worry. Yeah, brilliant.
So, I would be entering, like, and I did like fancy dress where I dressed up as an Imperial Guardsman, and me and my dad made this las gun for me to take with him. And I think I won stuff for that. So, you know, putting in the effort and the time meant I could actually get quite a big lot of miniatures, even on just kind of teenager amount of money. Because, you know, we weren't rich or anything. So my parents weren't splurging lots of money for me to get all these miniatures. So, you know, I'd get Christmas and birthday presents, and then it was just what I could get with my pocket money the rest of the time. So, I had that. I had Space Wolf Army, funnily enough, as the ones that entered into the competition. I had a Space Orc Army that was also quite big, including a handmade Gargant. I made it out of cardboard.
Right.
It was back then, and they let you play it in the shop back then. You know, if you they weren't that fussy about what you turned up with,
Yeah.
as long as it was painted.
You bring it back on ships, you'll be right, mate. You'll be fine, yeah.
I think I only got to play that with. They put out this. There was vehicle creation rules for third edition in White Dwarf, I think, or
Right.
something like that. So you could make any vehicle you wanted, and I was like, ha, 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 ha. Great! Time for me to go mad building nonsense, and I can take it into the shop, and I can go, I've got official rules for this, because I think it was Andy Chambers put it together.
Right.
So I mean, I played fourth and fifth edition fantasy, and I played a bit of second edition 40K. But just because of my age at the time, you know, you're not necessarily playing all these things quite properly. And I think the first time I was playing anything properly was third edition 40K, actually. Because they simplified the rules quite a lot then, it was much easier to get a game set up and things like that. And but I do remember having one big 5,000 point battle with my orc and goblins. I managed to field the whole army against two of my pals. One of them had a dwarf army. You'd have liked the, I had like, you know, the Anvil of Doom, and had a squadron of gyrocopters and things like that. But he basically just tooled them up with all of the stuff he could throw at them to like bring the points up and up and up and up and up and up, to then just so that he could. I think he managed to field like 3,000 points of dwarves, and then one of my other pals, I can't remember what he had. I think it was maybe high elves. I can't believe we'd have put high elves and dwarves on the same side, but
Heresy.
putting their differences aside to fend off the orc horde.
Shave off your beard, that's what I would say. the man who has a high elf army directly next to his dwarf army there on the cabinet. So, yeah.
Yeah, but you'd never field them at the same time. You
You
know,
never feel
you've
them the
got
same.
principles.
That's exactly right. Exactly. Never trust an elf. That's what I'd say. The skirts would be, lifted up and running off in no time. That's my experience with elves. So that's interesting, mate. I'm really happy that your dad got involved with your hobby. I mean, that's something like my, and nothing to begrudge my father, but my father just was not interested in what I was doing in the hobby, that kind of thing. Like, he just wasn't interested. But it's nice that your dad, helped you with the costumes. He drove you to the locations in the Games Workshop or whatever. I think it's lovely.
Well, I think he was quite happy to get rid of me one day a week. You know, leaves his Saturday free. But he also, I think, you know, that's not fair on him. I think he liked the fact that it was quite creative, because I was very much always, and still am, I like making models and I like painting models, and I do like playing the game. But definitely, if I had to choose between the two, it's always going to be actually just creating the doing the painting and things like that. And building things. I just love it. I love that whole kind of side of things. And I'm trying to push myself now. I'm gonna be entering a painting competition
All right.
start of May, but the
Nice.
first in-person one. I entered a couple of online ones, and won both of those. Just little ones, nothing major. Got some massive trophies, like ha they're like Thor's hammer, and someone sprayed them gold and put a little plaque on them,
Okay.
as a fella sent them over from America for me,
Wow.
which was
All
great.
right.
Yeah,
Nice.
no, it's really nice of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to try to do it. So I'm going to a little event in Scotland, at the start of May, and I think you saw I've been painting the Avatar of Kane, the old 90s one.
Yeah, that's cool, man. That's awesome.
But I'm very slow at this kind of thing. And running a business and taking care of a wee one means that I don't get a lot of time to really sit down. So, hopefully I'll get it finished in time. I'll have something to put there, and hopefully it's finished to my satisfaction. So,
I hope so for
but
you.
yeah.
It's really nice so far. Like you, what you've shown on their Discord looks really cool. So, Yeah. I mean, I can understand that. You got a lot of other commitments that's taking away from your painting desk, but a model like that needs time. You need to do sections, small parts, and sort of work your way through it, because yeah, that's a big investment, a big avatar of, the Jez Gooden avatar of Kane. You need a lot of time to sink into that model to make it look absolutely beautiful. So that's good, mate. Awesome.
Oh, it was just a model that I loved as a kid, and I never had it back then. I think I got that one for 7 quid off eBay, including postage. It was dripping with paint, like when I got it. That's what I like to do. Is like I did the same. One of the other painting competition entries was a Chaos Lord, and that was another one where I think it's that model. I saw it on eBay for sale, and I think it was like a 99p bid or something like that. Really, really cheap, because I was looking at it and going, it's the right shape to be that model, but it was just covered in paint, and you just dump them in the Dettol, pull them out, give them a run over with a toothbrush, and then try and give them a new lease of life. And I find that really kind of satisfying,
Yeah, I think maybe that's
to
a hobby in itself, like a restoration projects, like they're saving models that are like
yeah.
covered in like five layers of paint, you know what I mean? Almost. Yeah.
The Chaos Lord was, I mean, the Avatar of Kane, you could at least see that it was still the Avatar of Kane, but the Chaos Lord, I was just like, I'm gonna take a punt on this one. There's something under there. I'll find out.
That's for the mystery box, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's been great getting back into the hobby, and just it's very satisfying. So yeah, I'm still looking over there at all my
No,
stuff.
you're doing it all up, mate. That's great. You're probably longing for it, saying like, I really want to paint those models, and I want to paint my terrain, and like you say, it's real life shit getting in the way, mate. You know what I mean? Like you got your company you're working on, your family you got to concentrate on. But yeah, the time you have to sit down and paint, you really value that time. You know what I mean? So it's not that's nice. That's lovely. That's good.
No,
And
it's important. Is
you're doing it with your daughter too. Like you're doing terrain with your daughter, which is lovely.
yeah, doing I did some miniature painting as well. She hasn't I do it when she asks. I don't try and push it upon her, and things like that. And what I did was I actually 3D printed some miniatures at 56 mil scale for her, because she's quite wee. And so it's a bit easier for her to do and to hold and things like that. And she had a great time. And then we made up a little game where she was trying to rescue a dog from a maze. There was a necromancer. A necromancer, because she wanted to paint some skeletons. And then I found these kind of anthropomorphic, like these animals, like, so it's like a bunny rabbit with a sword and a shield, and a cat in armor, and a snake with a big spear and things like that. So that was her kind of warband. And I set up this kind of maze with Jenga blocks,
All right.
and she had to get through the maze and rescue the dog and things like that. And then she made a house for the necromancer at a Duplo.
I love it. That's great.
She's really sweet with that kind of thing. And like the Chaos Lord that I painted, I was entering a competition, and the theme was it had to be colorful. And so I asked her what he should be. So he was bright pink and turquoise. So he's like bright pink with these huge bright turquoise horns coming out his helmet, and a zebra print cloak and things like that. So she was. So, and I won a competition with that. So I might not have won it if it hadn't been for her excellent choice of colors.
That's right. She's got a really eye for it, isn't she? That's great.
Yeah.
That's nice. It's nice because I like that about the Bedroom Battlefields Discord, that they have like a kind of like a, I don't know what it's called, but it's like
Oh, the hobby parenting.
a hobby parenting channel. I really like that kind of thing where it's introducing your kids to the hobby, and I think it's really important because it's those memories that your daughter have and other kids have that they bring that through into their adult life, and I think, oh, that's right. I remember that playing those games with my dad years ago with those little miniatures, and we did things together and rolled some dice and stuff like that that stays with them. You know what I mean? So I think that's a lovely, little yeah, you sort of just, slowly getting him into like tabletop wargaming for the future, if you like. Because yeah, a lot of us sort of discovered it through books or magazines and that kind of thing, and other people just sort of introduce it through their parents or uncles or friends or people at school and that kind of thing as well. Mate, can you remember your first White Dwarf magazine at all?
I can't. I've racked my brain about this over the years, and the thing is that I inherited a bunch of them from my brother all at the same time,
Right.
and I can't even. I've actually got a load of White Dwarfs, old White Dwarfs in PDF form, that I found, and I went through a load of them, and I was trying to figure out which was the oldest one that I'd had, and I can't pinpoint it exactly. Yeah, I definitely had the one with the cardboard bunker, that I think I bought that. I think that was one of the first ones that I bought, but I'm not sure if it was the very first one that I bought for myself, because I remember building the bunker terribly. It was a really, really wonky thing, because I would have been, oh, I don't think I'd have even been 10 at that point. I think it was me kind of trying to copy my brother and be like, oh, I get myself a White Dwarf as well. Yeah, it's a shame. I remember lots of great things from White Dwarf. Adrian Wood, I think they were talking about it on the Discord, but he built that, the Dreadnought, I think it was for, did he build it for a Gorkamorka thing? I think there was a Gorkamorka thing where there was a dreadnought that had gotten loose, and you had to try and stop it or something like that. It was a certainly a game like that anyway, and he built it out of two of the old kind of space orc catapults and bits of the original orc dreadnought, bits of the second edition orc dreadnought as well were in there. There was like the metal panels off the side of the turret for the Hellhound, and there's this little extra armor panels, and I remember looking at that, and I think that was like something that really sparked my brain of like, oh, I can make all sorts of things out of all of this nonsense. I sat and I picked out like all these different bits of it, and I was just like, so he's just made this out of nonsense. That's amazing. And and then I've hardly looked back since. So
Well, I'm sure I appreciate that you remembered that. That's lovely. Yeah, mate, that's good. I think we'll have to cover that issue of White Dwarf together at some point. It'll be really nice to do with you.
I'll have a dig through, and I'll see what I can find, and I'll let you know. And we can I'll really try a bit harder to find what I think was the oldest White Dwarf I had, certainly. So it's
Brilliant.
probably from somewhere kind of like possibly even pre-Rogue Trader, just but only just, kind of somewhere around that kind of era. But that was, like I say, it would be my brother that had bought it, but I would have inherited it, kind of thing. I just spent so long looking through all those, and battle reports were great. I loved all the little graphics, and things like that. So who is it? It says there's a YouTube channel that does battle reports like that these days.
Alden
He's got
Demon.
all, yeah, that's the one. Yeah, it just it's really it just starts firing neurons in your brain that haven't been there, like been dormant for decades, and you're suddenly like, oh, what's that? I'll have a dig out, and we can sort something out. That's for
Oh,
sure.
yeah, do that. Yeah, absolutely. Even if it's like your favorite White Dwarf, that's fine. Of those collection of White Dwarfs your brother had that you inherited, just have a look and see what you find the most reminiscent. But I think maybe the sort of the cardstock building one might be a good one for you because it's like,
Okay.
yeah, I think it'd be good because it's the first building you built, either if it's terribly or not or whatever. It doesn't matter, but it sort of links to you to being a terrain builder now in
It's
three.
also the first thing that I produced for 3D printing as well. And it's the oldest model up on my cults is my version of that. So
So
it
awesome.
does tie in a little bit, yeah.
Now, actually, are you actually gaming nowadays?
Occasionally, my wife kindly will, but we tend to play like we've played Space Weirdos and things like that. So not actually. And oh, I did make her play Mordheim, which is because that was kind of actually one of the things that got me back into the hobby was picking up a copy of the Mordheim rule book in a charity shop. I spotted it on the shelf and went, I think I'm going to go home with this. That's lovely. I remember that from when I was a kid, and it's one of the most beautifully complete and bits. I don't know if you've ever looked through the Mordheim rule book.
Never have, mate. Sorry, no.
As a single object, it is one of the best books that Games Workshop has produced. There's lots of great books out there, but this feels from front to back cover like a single piece that has been beautifully put together. There's nothing that looks out of place. It re and the artwork and his looks. John Blanche was, I think, really wanted to be in charge of the artwork for that, and it really shows that he kind of has got his fingerprints all over it. And I think him and Tuomas Pyrönen really obviously worked well together on it. The game itself is interesting. Probably, I think it was the first thing I got my wife to play. I think I got the rule book home and I made some terrain out of some Lego,
All right, okay.
and got some random models that I had from running D&D games and put together two warbands and had a go. And I think so far actually I haven't played a lot of games with her, but I don't think I've actually won any games against my wife, who has no experience playing these kind of things. The closest thing she's got is like kind of combat in fifth edition D&D. Yeah, I said the dice hate me. They absolutely hate me. That's like we played Space Weirdos, and I had like a little group of Imperial Guardsmen, and I had an Ogryn in there with them, and he was meant to be like the muscle with the big gun. And first turn, he just got wiped off the board. And I was like, that's most of my squad. That's like most of the points of my squad gone in one turn. So, yeah. So that's just the way it is. But, she's very understanding place. But I need to try and find a club to go play at or something like that. It's just finding the time, you know. You got to drive there, spend an evening there, and drive back. And so I'll figure something out at some point. But as I say, I'm very happy just creating. You know,
Yeah, that's good.
that's the bit which really my wife will laugh at me because I'll like we'll be going to bed and she'll have gone to brush her teeth, and half an hour later she'll come back through. And she go, are you coming through? You know, can I turn the lights off? I want to go to sleep. And I'm sitting there just looking at something I was painting earlier this evening. I just spent like half an hour staring at what I've been painting, kind of looking at what I can do next, looking at bits that need tidying up and things like that. But at the same time, that gives me real satisfaction of just looking at this thing that I've created and that I've. Good for your mental health. That's what I find with this hobby.
Absolutely, mate.
So,
Absolutely, mate.
Jazz,
Yeah.
I need at some point I may well up my Patreon tier on your Patreon and get some painting lessons from you.
Yeah, please do, mate. Love to.
Preferably to you might be able to help me paint a bit quicker because I'm just painfully slow. As I look at your commission projects and I'm just like, that's like years for me to
Yeah.
paint one of those.
Yeah,
So,
unfortunately, speed comes with time, my friend. Speed comes
yeah.
with time. I've been painting for over 30 years now, would you believe? It's
I
quite
saw some of
staggering.
the.
It's quite
I
staggering.
think I I think you shared some of the ones that was it Dark Elves that you did for Games Workshop back in the day?
I showed some of the battle book pictures from the fifth edition, some conversions, but again, it like I know I did those, but the Lizardmen, I think I did a Lizardmen unit, but apart from that, it's very sketchy. I did some conversions and stuff like that, but I can't really remember. It's so long ago now.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I was only there for like 4 months. It was like a very, very short time. So, the hazy memories of Games Workshop Nottingham at the studio. Yeah. But anyway, mate, look, it's been a wonderful time to talk to you. I really enjoyed meeting you and seeing you for the first time and putting a face to the name. Thank you again for your patronage. And I look forward to, if you do decide to jump on the painting tutorials, let's just try and see what we can do. Because I'm sure I can show you some hacks or quick ways of getting stuff painted quickly that you can get them. But it depends. I mean, some people like to take their time with their miniatures, like you're doing with your avatar. And, projects like that take a lot of long time to complete, and if it's for an army that you're painting like a mass amount of models for, then yeah, okay, maybe some simple solutions for those would be really helpful. So it really depends on what you want to do. So let me know.
I will do. No, thank you very much for having me on. It's been an absolute pleasure. I hope somebody finds this me rambling interesting.
I certainly did.
Oh,
I
well,
enjoy every
thank you
conversation.
very much. It saves my wife having to listen to me for
Yeah, she want to go to bed soon, but
an
it's been good to talk to everybody I have on the podcast, mate. Honestly, it's lovely to meet all these people around the world, including yourself. And yeah, mate, look, I've got to go and feed my boy downstairs. I think it's about like 8 o'clock up here now, so I better go
Oh, I
downstairs
won't keep you from that then. Yeah, no, just
and keep him company and see what he's doing there. He's probably spent about the last 2 hours playing his Nintendo Switch. So it's time to switch that off and eat some food. So thanks, mate, again for your time today. Really appreciate it. I know our listeners do. And I look forward to going through your first White Dwarf in the future sometime.
yeah, I'll go and look up a copy of that and have a look through it and so no, thank you again for having me on, and
No problem, Dr. Spork. Okay, thanks, mate.
cheers.
Take care.